disclaimer. The following broadcast gives a true and honest account of the events described, and all evidence and details herein are solely factual. What you are about to hear is real and may disturb you. Caution is strongly advised. Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
If you enjoy our show and find our research interesting, please consider supporting us. Head over to www.deadsoulspodcast.com and see how you can donate to our research and investigations and find other ways to support us. We really appreciate you stopping by. You can also find us over on Instagram if that's more your thing. Just search Dead Souls Podcast and we'll come up. As always, thank you for joining us. We're getting into some pretty hokey territory tonight. On April 23rd, 2006, a Sunday, in the city of Kiev in Ukraine, police were called to deal with a confused man who was standing in the road and acting very distressed. When the authorities arrived, they found a young man, roughly 30 years of age, who was visibly scared and wasn't entirely sure where he was. He was dressed in strange, dated and anachronistic clothing and carrying a Russian Zorky film camera. What began as a simple duty of care stop by the police would quickly escalate into something a lot more bizarre. The man identified himself as Sergei Ponomarenko. He handed the police his identification card upon request from them. The first thing they noticed regarding the ID card was that it was issued from a country that no longer existed, and hadn't existed for more than 15 years, the Soviet Union. Ukraine was, of course, part of the Soviet Union until its independence in August of 1991, but the Soviet Union had long vanished into history at that point. The police rarely, if ever, these days, saw these IDs much, and especially from such a young person. This guy looked like he was in his 20s or early 30s, the police thought. But the ID he gave them, and confirmed was his own, stated that his birthday was in 1932. The picture on the ID card was quite clearly and obviously the man stood in front of them, so something didn't quite add up. The police asked him what day he thought it was, and he answered April 23rd, 1958. The date he gave was exactly 48 years earlier. The police weren't sure about this man, and weren't sure that he should be left alone, and invited him back to the police station to assess his condition, although not under arrest. The gentleman obliged, equally as confused. The more questions the police asked the man, the more confused and agitated the man seemed. So they enlisted the help of Dr. Pablo Khodrakov, a psychiatrist at Kiev's Pavlov Psychiatric Hospital. The doctor explored the information that Sergei gave him and probed him further. He asked him if he knew or if he could remember how he wound up in the year 2006, even though he thought it was 1958. Sergei replied with the following. It was daytime, broad daylight, and I wanted to go for a walk into the city and take photographs. That's my passion. I took my camera and left my house. Not so far from my house, I think, on the same street even, I saw a strange object that had a bell shape that was hovering stationary in the sky. It was very strange and it was flying in a strange way. It is difficult to explain what I was seeing. It might be better to look at the photos from my camera that I took. The story that Sergei was providing was getting more and more fantastic. However, the doctor was intrigued by the prospect of photographic evidence. Dr. Khodrakov was given the camera, and the first thing he noticed was that it was an old Soviet Zorky 1. The doctor was somewhat of a photographer himself. He knew right away that this was an antique and hadn't been in production for decades. As it turned out, they stopped making the Zorky 1 cameras in 1956. But I digress. Whilst the type of camera was certainly an interesting addition to the story, Dr. Khodrakov was aware that Zorky cameras use a type of film that hadn't been manufactured since the early 1970s. You can't just take it down to the local pharmacy and get it developed, he thought. So the doctor called in a photography expert friend of his, named Vadim Posner. Posner was able to see from the real info that it was manufactured in 1956, and yet in perfect condition. So he developed the role. And this is where everything got even more strange. What Posner found on the reel were photos of Kiev. but clearly from a long time ago. All the cars, all the clothes, all the street signs, all appeared to be from the 1950s, and they were photos of buildings that didn't exist anymore, buildings that had long since been demolished and redeveloped. And right there in front of those buildings was Sergei, posing with his girlfriend, seemingly enjoying a beautiful day out and wearing the exact same clothes he was wearing right now. In the last photograph on the reel, just like Sergei had suggested, there was a photograph of a bell-shaped craft or object in the sky. When the doctor asked him about the UFO photograph, Sergei stated, "Now are you convinced I'm telling the truth? I so far do not understand what this object is and how something like that happened to me. At the same moment when I took the picture and I went down to look at the camera, I somehow showed up in this year, here, now." Dr. Khodrakov, being scientifically minded, hypothesized that if this was some kind of alien spacecraft in the photograph, it could perhaps have flown him across the universe at the speed of light and brought him back in a split second. Due to what we know about Einstein's theory of relativity, he would experience time dilation, meaning that the time would have barely passed for him, but back on Earth, 47 years would have gone by. That, of course, Dr. Khodrakov said, is if any of this was true at all. Understandably, he was skeptical of Sergei's story. Sergei was shown to a room where he would undergo further questioning and observation, following some rest for the evening. The door, of course, was sealed and locked for the night. The following morning, Dr. Khodrakov wanted to make an early start with Sergei and try to learn more from him. The doctor and an orderly went to Sergei's windowless room at around 8 a.m. and found it empty. Sergei was gone. The hospital security camera captured Sergei entering the room the night before, but it never filmed him leaving. There was only one way out of this room, as it contained no windows. The room was on a floor with three other rooms, with an orderly and security at the end of the hall, just two doors away. It was under constant, 24-hour surveillance and observation. This is Strange but True Time Travel. Sergei had just vanished, gone, leaving the police and doctor with his camera, his photographs, and a crazy mystery to solve. The police did some periphery investigation regarding this case as it sat on their mind for some time. They found out that there was a Sergei Ponomarenko declared missing in Kiev in 1960. The missing person's image on the file was the same photograph that Sergei had on his ID card. The police were able to track down the woman in the photograph, his girlfriend, as she had been the person who reported Sergei missing some 46 years prior. She was now 74 years old, and she told the police that Sergei had disappeared that day in 1958, just as the report had stated, but that he had returned just a few days later. She stated that she didn't inform the police he had returned or close the missing persons report, as he went missing again shortly after, and this time, he was never seen again. One last thing that Sergei's fiancée told the police, however, was that several years after he vanished, she stated she received a letter in the mail. The letter was brief. It said it was from Sergei and that he loved her and missed her immensely, but not to worry, he would return to her soon. The letter was dated 2050, and Sergei stated that he was still in Kiev, but a more developed and larger city following a war that lasted a number of years between Russia and Ukraine, which meant significant rebuilding was done. He stated the city is now full of people who carry around portable computer communication devices, and the country is much more westernized after it joined the European Union and cut ties with Russia following the war. Finally, there was a photograph of a mustached man and much older Sergei standing on the bank of the Dnieper River. His fiancée stated that she recognized Sergei immediately and recognized the river and some of the background places in Kiev, but the many new skyscrapers and monuments visible in the picture were completely alien to her. Time travel is a fascinating subject, and a lot of thought has been put into how it would actually work. The story of Sergei Ponomarenko is a fascinating one, and whether you decide to believe it or not, it certainly poses some interesting questions. For example, a paper published in Classical and Quantum Gravity in September 2020 suggested that there's actually a way to travel backwards in time. They looked at Einstein's theory of relativity, specifically his calculations that show that it should be possible for an object in the universe to travel through space and time in a circular direction and end up back at the starting point. Einstein called it closed timeline curve. Physicists, however, when talking about time travel, have to deal with paradoxes such as the grandfather paradox, for example. This is the hypothesis where a time traveler who goes back in time to the past and kills a younger version of their grandfather. This would have a knock-on effect, and in time would mean that the time traveler's parents were never born, and thus the time traveler himself would never be born. So how did that person then change history, going back in time in the first place? The writers of this paper believe that the billiard ball model, as they call it, would resolve this paradox. Imagine several billiard balls spread across a circular table. When you push one ball away from position X, it goes around the table and hits the other balls in a particular pattern. The researchers calculate that even if the ball's pattern is changed at some point during its journey, that future interactions with the other balls will therefore correct its path. This means the expectation is that the original billiard ball will come back to position X, reconnecting at the same cosmic speed as if it hadn't been altered in the first place. Some scientists use this model to explain how, if you did travel back in time, you could change any events that you pleased, but that you wouldn't significantly affect history or the future. So, ergo, this would mean that fate, for lack of a better phrase, would intervene and stop you killing your grandfather, in terms of that spoken about paradox, for example. But no matter what you did, the salient events would just recalibrate around you. I'm not so sure how I feel about this scientific theory, however. It essentially presents a reality controlled by determinism. If the world will just recalibrate around you, and any changes you make, then what causes this recalibration? What fundamental quantum force retains our eternal navigation? If this theory is true, it also dissolves any notion of free choice, free will, and essentially dials us into a pre-written narrative for all time. Like a story just playing out where we're all just simply NPCs. It will be a long time until we can prove or disprove this theory and send a person or probe on a chase timeline curve. It's unfortunately not likely in our lifetimes. On June 29th, 2009, renowned physicist Professor Stephen Hawking sent out a number of party invites to the world's experts in physics, space-time research, and engineering. The invites contained the date, time, and coordinates for the event, and details of a very exclusive party for the world's elite minds featuring champagne and canapes. It sounded like a hell of a night, plus, who wouldn't want to go and meet the famous Professor Hawking? The party, however, had occurred the night before on June 28th. Hawking published photographs of himself enjoying the champagne, trays of food behind him, sporting a delightful party hat, and so many balloons. There was, however, no guests. No one had turned up, just Hawking. It was, of course, a scientific experiment by Hawking. He hoped that if anyone who had seen the invite in the future had discovered the secrets of time travel and created a time machine, might stop by for a drink and a chat. He said to the press at the time, "I'm hoping copies of the invitation in one form or another will survive for many thousands of years, in which case the party is on June 28th, 2009, and the coordinates are 52 by 12 by 21 degrees north and 0 by 7 by 4.7 east. If you're a time traveler and reading this, please don't keep me waiting." I mean, it's certainly a fun little experiment. Can you imagine if somebody actually did turn up? But does this disprove time travel? Or mean that time travel will never be achieved by mankind? Well, not really. It might just mean no one wants to go to that party. Or maybe it gets forgotten about and no one with a time machine is ever aware that this experiment happened. Maybe those who eventually do build a time machine think there's other things in history that they would like to see more than a party with a lone scientist and some Bollinger. Interesting to think. Chapter 2. John Titor. On November the 2nd, 2000, a user known as John Teeter, or by username TimeTravel_0, began posting on Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM and Time Travel Internet forums. This was at a time when the internet was in its commercial infancy, and forums were an extremely popular form of communication. This was quite a number of years before social media becoming a thing. The poster claimed to be an American military serviceman and had arrived in the year 2000 from the year 2036 as part of a military operation. Teeter made numerous scientific claims of future events, regarding calamitous events including a nuclear war and the breakup of the United States due to a civil war in the 2030s. The first posts using John Teeter's military symbol appeared on the Time Travel Institute forums on November the 2nd under the name TimeTravel_0. The posts discussed time travel in general, the first one being the 6 parts description of what a time machine would need to have or to ensure that the time circuits could be activated. Teeter also provided responses to questions about how such a machine would work, often going into technical specifics. Early messages were short, but they grew in length, specificity, and technological detail as the discussion progressed. It wasn't until January 2001 when TimeTravel_0 introduced himself by his real name of John Teeter and used this title going forward. All communications with Teeter ended in March 2001, after a 4-month period. In Teeter's postings, he claimed to be based at a military installation in Tampa, Florida. He was assigned to a United States governmental time travel project that required him to journey to the year 1975. The purpose of his mission was to obtain an IBM 5100 computer. The computer was needed to debug various legacy computer programs in 2036, something that computers couldn't do in that time. It is now known that the IBM 5100 runs the APL and basic programming languages, which would resolve the Unix year 2038 data problem. Teeter stated that he had been selected for the mission specifically given that his paternal grandfather was directly involved with the assembly and programming of the 5100 in the early 1970s. Teeter, to support his claims, described unpublicized features of the 5100 and technical information that was not in the public domain until several years later. Initially, suspicions arose from viewers of the messages that they were being hoaxed by a computer programmer with privileged information. Teeter went on to state that he had stopped temporarily in the year 2000 for personal reasons, but to essentially collect photographs that were lost in the Second American Civil War, and also to visit his family who he hadn't seen in a number of years. He spoke a lot about his family and provided a number of emotional posts about them. Teeter also provided details and warnings about the threat of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, which spread throughout beef products at the time. He also attempted to warn people about the civil war within the United States and what would trigger it. Teeter was also questioned about the UFO phenomenon and asked if this had been debunked or if an answer was widely available during his time. Teeter himself found the subject of UFOs fascinating, but admitted that there had been no extraterrestrial contact with Earth in his time either. He did, however, allude to UFOs not being of extraterrestrial origin at all, however, and were instead vehicles of time travel, and that UFOs were human visitors from the future. Teeter was very forthcoming with the ins and outs of time travel, explaining in detail the components that went into building a time machine. He described his time machine as a stationary mass temporal displacement unit, which was powered by 2 topspin dual positive singularities. This, he said, produced a standard offset tipler sinusoid. The actual structure of the machine wasn't important, Teeter explained, as tipler sinusoid was the main function asset, which bent spacetime ahead of whatever vehicle you chose. Teeter's earlier posts were more specific details and more explicit, saying the time machine had to consist of the following: 2 magnetic housing units for the dual microsingularities, an electron injection manifold to alter mass and gravity of the microsingularities, a cooling and X-ray venting system, gravity sensors on a variable gravity lock, 4 main cesium clocks, and 3 main supercomputer units. The cesium clocks made the vehicle very unstable and potentially explosive with minimum disruption. This device was installed in the rear of a 1987 Chevrolet Silverado, Teether explained, due to power, space, and availability of the vehicle in his time. Teether also elaborated on the future Civil War, stating, "The Civil War would split the US into five different regions with different goals. The war would end with a short nuclear exchange. At the conclusion of the bomb's drop-in, Omaha, Nebraska would become the capital of the United States." Teether's final claim was that the Everett Wheeler model of quantum physics, also known as the Many Worlds interpretation, was correct, and this is what his time travel evidenced and found. The Many Worlds interpretation states that there are an infinite number of universes, that we exist in one of a number of multiverses, which is one of the leading theories of existence currently in physics and philosophy. This would also mean past paradoxes would be resolved by alternate future time streams and split time strings. Since Teether disappeared, a number of attempts over the preceding 22 years have been made to find Teether. However, all attempts to find him have been fruitless. Based on Albert Einstein's field equations and general theory of relativity, in 1994, the Alcubierre drive, a speculative warp drive idea that was created by Mexican theoretical physicist Miguel Alcubierre. The drive would work by being built into a craft and would enable it to achieve faster than light travel by contracting space in front of it and expanding space behind it under the assumption that a configurable energy density field lower than that of negative mass could be created. The drive is as yet to be realized due to cost and also the requirement for dark matter to power the drive. But peer reviewers agree that this drive is theoretically possible. The drive, however, does bear stark resemblance in theoretical operation to that described by John Teether. Professor Stephen Hawking stated in his book Black Holes and Baby Universes, published in 1994, "The best evidence we have that time travel is not possible and never will be is that we have not been invaded by hordes of tourists from the future." But what if these tourists are in fact here and have been here for a long time? What if those tourists are known but unexplained phenomenon? I mentioned earlier that all attempts to trace John Teether until present have found nothing. But one thing that was interesting was why Teether said that he was chosen for his time travel mission. He stated that his paternal grandfather was involved in the programming of the IBM 5100 computer back in the early 1970s. Researchers based in Kissimmee, Florida in 2020 contacted the IBM company to ask if they had any record of a John Teether at their company. Of course they didn't. Interestingly, however, between 1969 and 1976, a Philip Teether had worked for the organization as a computer programmer. Philip Teether sadly died in 1988. Do you believe we will ever achieve time travel? I would love to know your thoughts. Drop us a line. Get in touch. Good night.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our show tonight. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on your chosen podcast platform and subscribe to our show so that you never miss an episode. Our shows aren't sponsored by any company or corporation, so any support you can give us goes a long way in supporting the work that we do. Visit deathcult.com for more information on how you can help us and support our broadcasts. There you can also find links to our socials, Patreon, and episodes. From all of us here at Dead Souls, sleep tight.